This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California. This is side two of tape number 375, February the 9th, 1979. I'm going now some more into Rockefeller. Does this demise of his having died at this time, have greater repercussions? As I said, I think that if it were simply a girly affair, he was with Megan, they were caught. The press secretary had to cover it up. They panicked. They made all kinds of excuses. I believe maybe the hour lapse, say, is to get him dressed, to get her dressed. They don't know what to do. How does that make it a political act? Well, I believe that the early cremation, for one matter, is a political act, that they didn't have to cremate him a day early. It was rushed. I think that every public official should have an autopsy. You know, families whose husband or wife are in public life are controversial, whether you're a well-known writer or a district attorney or prosecuting attorney or a witness in an important case, you know, a law case in courts going on, presidents, vice presidents, congressmen, persons on important committees, people who are in positions of power where their life or death makes a very big difference. Every single one of those, it should be mandatory that they have autopsy. I think that it's outrageous that they don't have autopsies, because the whole course of our history is being influenced by one murder after the other murder. And just to categorically say, well, the wife doesn't want an autopsy, she wants a cremation, therefore happy gets her way, is not enough. This man was on the Council of Foreign Relations, belonged to the Bilderbergers, set up the trilateral, was opposed to Barry Goldwater and Ronald Reagan and John Connolly. He had political cliques, Kissinger versus Brzezinski, Cyrus Vance versus Brzezinski. There are big power stakes here, oil companies, Connolly Oil versus Standard Oil, Texas Oil, Mr. Bush running for president, the Texas Oil versus the Standard Oil, or the Royal Dutch Shell, the Queen Juliana and Prince Bernhard, a former Nazi, a board of directors of IG Farben, makers of chemical death and poisons all over the world. When you're dealing with people that have deciding opinions in major policies or even small policies, if there's a question of death, if a man has taken out a insurance policy and his wife dies quickly and he gets the money, I think in every one of these cases, the mate shouldn't have the decision, and particularly public figures. They get the privileges that go with being public figures. He gets the privilege of being the vice president. They get the home, they get the protection, the transportation, and all the fringe benefits public officials get with being in public office. And all of a sudden, they keel over, and the wife says, or the husband can say, if it's a woman who's in public life, I want him cremated. I don't think that person has the decision. I don't think Mr. and Mrs. Kopechne have the right to say, don't autopsy my daughter, because she was with and in the car of a man who was going to run for president of the United States in 1972. If she wants to party with these people, then she has to be cut up when she's dead for autopsy purposes to see if there's poison in their stomach. There's an article in the paper this week along those lines, and then we'll get back to Rockefeller, about a airplane crash that took place just at the time of the elections, before the last elections in Virginia. Mr. Aubenshane, 42 years old, died, and he was running, Richard D. Aubenshane. He was a candidate for the Republicans for Virginia. And in the primaries, he was running against Mr. Warner, Elizabeth Taylor's husband. Warner was Secretary of the Navy. He has been opposing the appointment of black judges in Virginia that Jimmy Carter wanted. He claims that the way he won the election over Mr. Miller, this final election, was because he came out staunchly for segregation in the Navy when he was Secretary of the Navy. He's a known racist. He was in charge of Richard Nixon's bicentennial committee, a known racist, going backwards, way back before the civil rights days. And he lost in the primary to Mr. Aubenshane, and Aubenshane won in the primary as the Republican candidate. And just this week in the newspaper, this last week, Associated Press article said a pilot error was blamed in the crash that killed the candidate for Senate. The airplane crash that killed Virginia Republican senatorial candidate Richard Obersheim was caused by a pilot error and misjudgments of the pilot that he made a visual landing in cloudy weather with too little experience. Now, the investigation was done. Killed was Obersheim, 42, Richard Neal, 42, of Alexandria, Virginia, co-owner of the plane. Another man, Robert Edelton, 28, a flight instructor. They were all killed, plus the pilot. But the investigation says they don't know the name of the pilot. The investigators could not determine who was piloting when it crashed. Now, wouldn't you think when you take the plane apart and you can pinpoint the fault to the pilot, you can at least know when the plane was registered who went out with that plane? All of them were deceased. They don't have the name of a deceased man. They say the pilot was at fault. Did he have parents? Did he have a wife? Couldn't you say, my husband was out that day with the candidate? No, the name is withheld. Why? Would it be linked to a spy operation? Was he one of these zombies, a kamikaze? Were the controls off? It's funny that four people were murdered, and then as soon as he was dead, Mr. Warner comes in and says, well, oh, well, I'll run for Republican as a senator. And then he won, and he won because by about 8,000 votes because he brought out the fact that he wanted segregation in the Navy as Secretary of the Navy. So that's the kind of world we're facing, and that's why autopsies are important, and truth is important. Truth about who the pilot was and how he got there and how four were killed to manipulate this kind of election chicanery so that the Senate, one way or another, through one death or another, can have a whole string of fascists. That's the way Hitler got elected in 1933. The choices are limited. It's like an article that was in the Washington Post in October 78, October 2nd, and I've done three tapes on the Pope John Paul II. But the article, big article, New York Times, Vatican criticized for lack of autopsy. And the article said that in the modern era, Cardinal Eugene Tisserand of France, Dean of the Sacred College of the Cardinals, believed that his patron, Pope Pius XI, was murdered. When Pius XI died in 1939, Tisserand contended he was about to denounce the Vatican's 1929 Concordat with Italy's fascist government. So the whole Catholic Church could swing along with Mussolini and go along with fascism. And Tisserand had said that Pope Pius XI was murdered. And then Tisserand fell out of a building. After that, this article doesn't go on to talk about Tisserand also being pushed out of a building, but the article goes into the possibility of poison as an instrument of the government of the Vatican. Now, the Washington Post, October the 2nd, 1978, is quoting people saying that poison is a instrument of the Vatican. Then why can't it be an instrument of the Republican Party in 1979 in the apartment of Nelson Rockefeller? As I said before, Dr. Michael Baden was the man before the House Select Committee, the chief of the medical panel. If you want to look up your tapes or your testimony, when it'll be printed soon. It was September the 7th that he testified before the House Select Committee. And now he's saying about Nelson Rockefeller, as the head examiner of New York City, no indication that any crime was committed. Now that's what Dr. Baden is saying without examining even the arm of Dr. Rockefeller to see if he was given a shot of cyanide. Remember the headlines down in Jonestown that 910 people committed suicide. Then the doctor went in later and corrected it and said 900 people were murdered. And then he said he examined 70 people and 30 of them had needle marks in their arms. He didn't say if the other 40 were shot in the leg. They were covered up with blankets. And Mark Lane said he heard 89 rounds of shot, and there were men with guns there at their pointed at them if they didn't take the poison. Baden said there is no indication of any crime committed. How can there be an indication? I am sure if the body was supposed to be cremated on Monday and they hurried it up and did it on Saturday, that there must have been some indication, because here's an article, January 29th, 1979, Rockefeller's body is cremated one day earlier than expected. that they originally were going to cremate him on Monday, but there was no explanation why the body was cremated one day earlier than planned. Well, when you get a discrepancy of where he was and who he was with and who was called and who was there to receive him, and a specific doctor was sent there who ordered the cremation, and nobody knows how he got there, I'm sure Michael Baden isn't looking for a crime. As I say, if he covers up the killing of the president, he can do it here. He said, "We have not asked the district attorney to investigate." The Manhattan district attorney, Robert Morgenthau, I know him and know his work. He's not notorious for looking into any of the crimes in New York City. He's part of that clique in there that anything goes, bring in the next corpse. This is the type of judicial system we have from California to New York. Baden said, "We're not going to investigate this." He said, "The hour delay might have caused death, but we can't do anything about that now because the body is cremated." If I sound a little outraged, forgive me. I have no love for Nelson Rockefeller. This is no great obituary on Nelson Rockefeller, but we all suffer by this kind of escalation of death, because you see, if this keeps going on, and I think it's gotten too far out of hand, it's sort of like the story of the killer bees coming from Brazil. I don't think we'll ever be able to have an election where, or have any good person exist that can stop us anymore from seeing them killed. I sincerely believe that. Mort Saul wrote in his book Heartland why he referred to me, and he said, "Well, how many people have to die before they listen to Maeve Russell?" And I think that's a good question. I don't think any person who's decent, any person who runs for any office or a decent witness, has a chance to survive anymore. I think too much has gone down the drain, and unless we get out in the streets and demonstrate and show our outrage like the Muslims are doing over in Iran now, showing outrage to American exploitation, there's no way to stop the killings. I think anybody who is part of these conspiracies also has no chance of surviving. I think Rockefeller is totally expendable. I think that good people such as Pope John Paul I, gentle people or kind people or good politicians, don't have a chance. Anybody who wants to affect a social change is killed. I wrote the 1972 in my article on why was Martha Mitchell kidnapped and the American assassins. I wrote it again in 73 in The Realist, the Senate Select Committee is part of the cover-up, and again in 1974, the SLA is the CIA. Anybody who's decent goes down the drain, and I think the killers just have too much going now. There's too many teams. They have the media behind them, and the way they get the media behind them is to get the man with the girly, and then they call that, in quotes, being discreet. There's absolutely no reason why this district attorney in New York City can't ask more questions about, for example, how the doctor got there, if the doctor got there before the emergency was called, is this a safe house, did these girls have any contact with intelligence operations, did they either work for the CIA or FBI or the defense agencies, who did they work for before? The Associated Press is a cover for the CIA for Ms. Marshak. But Conchita Pierce, where did she come from when she got her job in New York City? She's totally innocent, and if she's innocent and she called the chauffeur, why wasn't the chauffeur there? The time discrepancies I asked about last week, calling the ambulance. Marshak was alone with Rocky. As I say before, maybe she can't dress him. Maybe they're both, she can dress herself, but she can't dress him. But she calls Conchita, and that the possibilities and the time discrepancy are about three or four. Maybe, as I say, a girly party and she gets some help. But that doesn't make sense, because the chauffeur would have come in if they addressed him. She could have dressed him herself, I should think, and then call the ambulance. I can't believe that the hour lapse wasn't anything except what it was supposed to be, an hour lapse. And we haven't seen a thing about Lonnie Wilcher, the chauffeur, or the two security guards that were with him, or why Umuro covered up, and this long series of lies on the part of all of them has to be more than just covering up Rocky's cheating on his wife, because the cremation, the early cremation, and the arrogance with which the politicians are treating it, makes it a political act. There was no grief, there's total embarrassment, and everyone's staying away from it. And I think that this is important to think about and think about constantly. If Miss Megan Marshak was moving to California in 2 weeks, did she know? Was that her next assignment? Just like these very important people, Tim Stone, Grace Stone, Terry Buford, the people that handled the money for the People's Temple, the defectors, 17 of them now represented by a CIA attorney, they knew to get out. A whole bunch of them died, but the people that set up the bank accounts, they knew when to get out, didn't they? The Carter brothers and several other people, they heard the shooting and the screaming and the crying, and they went back and took the money out of there. Burnham, the prime minister's wife, flies in with a plane and takes away money or documents before the bodies are marked or evacuated. They knew where to go and get the money. They admitted they have it. They knew how to move in that direction. And I think that the Rockefeller story is the same kind of story to check Conchita and check Eskatov. And I just keep saying it over and over again because I think there's more to them than we know right now. Alexander Cockburn has an article in the Village Voice, which I received from friends in New York, really grateful for that, February 5th, 1978. I don't really like Cockburn, but I like his writing style. And I want to just give you about two sentences from his article. He says, "Never bigger than at the moment of death, so greedy for life, he managed to snatch an extra 60 minutes posthumously, and Nelson Rockefeller left at least one legacy." And he goes into that time-honored ritual of working late at the office that many wives will be dubious now about, these 25-year-olds in long black dresses waiting at the other end. But the important thing that comes up in this article, in addition to asking the questions about Dr. Ernest Eskatov, of who summoned him and when the call came that he was at the hospital when he died, he makes a comment here about the sequence of death, and he says this: "I dare say that if Jimmy Carter discussed the matter with Tong Saiping, the latter might have responded that similar uncertainties attended the death of Lin Pao." Lin Pao was working with Mao Zedong in China and was killed in an airplane crash. And I had said for many, many years in my research that Lin Pao was murdered so that this other team could take over the government in China. And Cockburn compares Rockefeller's death to Lin Pao. Then he goes on, "Certainly John Paul II could have confirmed from Mexico that contradictory statement following the death of his predecessor, John Paul I, you may recall. First stated by the Vatican, he was reading Thomas a Kempis when he died with a smile on his face. Later he had a heart attack reading unpleasant bureaucratic memorandum. Still later they said he was poisoned by a nun." I mentioned Pope John Paul I, and the important thing here is the time sequence that what Cockburn is talking about. Rockefeller dies February 26th in New York City. It is the beginning of the weekend and the celebrations in Washington, D.C. of the Chinese Prime Minister with Jimmy Carter, and Carter is partying there, and Carter is entertaining a man who came to power through murders of his own associates in China. Then he's referring to Pope John Paul II, who's off in Mexico simultaneously, who became the Pope because of the murder of Pope John Paul I. But the important thing about Mr. Tong's visit is his violent anti-Soviet, let's go to war against Russia stance. The important thing about Pope John Paul II is he's in Mexico with his violent anti-Soviet stance, picking on the Soviets and telling the church people, don't get radical or politicized and mind your own business, but let's go after the Soviet Union. So what you get is a team coming into Washington. If Reagan or Connally or General Haig or Bush get in, George Bush, and I think it'll be Reagan because, as I say, I think they selected him a long time ago. And when you get the Tsarist Nazi team from Stanford Research, the people from Stanford Research, such as Tim Stone, that set up the Jonestown drug control, set up Jim Jones when he came home from Brazil up in Mendocino, Ronald Reagan managed by Paul LaSalt, a direct representative of Howard Hughes. Howard Hughes wanted him to be president of the United States, but he represents Hughes aircraft, satellites, spy planes, Nevada, Intertel, you name it, Interpol, Intertel. When you combine Reagan and LaSalt and Stanford Research with the headquarters of the Hitler Nazi Galen operation and the Tsarist that have been trying to do in Russia all the time, when you get that triangle, when you get Reagan in there at one end and Mr. Tong in China ready to make war against Russia, and then at the other end you have the entire Catholic population heated up by the Pope, and you realize that every single one of these triangles that is spreading all over the world will spread like a disease called the Fourth Reich, have accumulated power identical to the way Hitler came to power. As Seymour Melman said in his book on the way Hitler came to power, and I quote it many times, you had the political assassination of 400 political leaders before Adolf Hitler could really in 1933 declare his total dictatorship. And this is what you're facing now. We're on the brink right now of World War III of the Fourth Reich. I really believe it. I've seen it for a long time. And I think the Rockefeller story fits right into the script, right this time. And I think it's something for you to consider. The triangle of power that's building up, the power base of China, on the one hand, with Mr. Tong visiting Hughes aircraft, Boeing aircraft up in Seattle, with Senator Jackson, you know, lashing out, using the White House for a platform against the Soviet Union, representing all those people in China, and the Pope coming to Mexico and representing the might of the Catholic Church with the best PR job I've ever seen. Get your scissors and whatever paper you have, cut out articles on the Pope. I've got more on him than Chappaquiddick, Churchill, and Patty Hearst combined already, and he's only been a Pope for a few months. He is getting press coverage, full pages, all over the world in every paper, kissing babies, wearing his little Mexican hat, doing his little human trip, but mouthing something very, very serious that came just prior to World War II. And you've got a team there if you get Reagan into that seat of power. And that's what he's gunning for. You have a triangle there of this huge might of China, the Catholic Church, and of course Reagan works with Bennett and Mullen and the Mormon Church and Paul LaSalt. So you have the weight of the entire Mormon Church with their data banks going back to the year 600, the genealogy of everybody and a record of everybody, their political thinking. They'll know who to screen out, who to accept, and who to rule out. So you have this triangle of power that is very, very strong. And I think that's the significance of wiping Rocky out at this time, is to secure that triangle base, and that's just exactly what they did. Now, Rocky was no great flaming liberal, don't get me wrong. I mean, this is a man who used family wealth to squeeze out every single person. He left that state totally bankrupt after being governor for 4 years, used Chase Manhattan to squeeze out small farmers, multiplied his deaths, his profits over the deaths of small people. Don't forget his murdering of 41 people up at Attica, which was totally unforgivable. It was just his little war, his private war, to show that he wasn't the liberal Republican, that he was conservative like the others. He helped with Henry Kissinger to overthrow Salvador Allende and put the Nazis into power. He's played footsie with every Latin American dictatorship for oil and profit and exploitation. He moves people around as if they're men on a chessboard. Countries are pawns. I'm not praising him. He's used that miserable German scumbag, Henry Kissinger, who I never believed was Jewish, but who worked with the Nazis in Brazil, Uruguay, Paraguay, Argentina, Guatemala, Greece, and with Sadat of the Bormann Brotherhood. I think that's one of the biggest hoaxes of the 20th century, this hugging and kissing of Kissinger and Rockefeller and then planning Nazis as heads of state. I don't accept it, and he employed Nancy Rockefeller under salary before she married Henry. He set up these committees like the Trilateral, the Bilderberger, the Council of Foreign Relations that take the decisions away from Congress. We can't send a man back there and tell him what we want. They tell Congress what they want. And the people in the United States have no decisions over their health or their savings or their food, whether it's being poisoned or not, or their housing or their education or their recreation or what they see on the big tube. These oil companies take over the sponsor KQED and the listener-sponsored stations. Everything is mobile. Exxon, and you watch these situation comedies or comedies about royalty. I call them comedies. They're boring, but they're comedies because they're so outdated. He imported Nazis after World War II. The Nuremberg trial wouldn't even touch them. Rockefeller used his headquarters for the spy headquarters. He covered up the assassination of John F. Kennedy, just that alone, and other political leaders when he headed as vice president the committee appointed by Gerald Ford to cover up these murders. And he hired David Belin, that CIA crook from the Warren Commission, with his twinkling, winking eye and his little bow tie, to be his chief investigator, chief counsel, to cover up for the Rockefeller Committee. What did he get for all this? What did he get for covering up the murder of foreign leaders, for covering up the murder of John Kennedy, for Chappaquiddick, covering up that? You know, all the investigations that he could have pushed for putting his Nazis into office all over the world, what did he get out of it? He got a Chappaquiddick like Ted Kennedy, and I guess there's a lesson in that for all of us, and I hope you heed it, because it's a good lesson on power and how power doesn't protect. I think that's the important thing, is that wealth, hundreds of millions of dollars, don't protect. You can read about all of the money that he accumulated and inherited, invested, and stole. Rockefeller Oil wanted to control all of the oil of the world by 1890, and they went on in and dealt with Nobel Oil and the oil fields in the Ukraine. And George de Morenchild worked with Nelson Rockefeller, and his father ran the Nobel oil fields for the Tsar in Russia. What did it get him? Nothing. It got him a Chappaquiddick affair. It got him a girl for the night. It got him a death and an hour wait and no ambulance, no identification. He died like a dog, just like any other person. He could stand for nothing except his art collections and his profits. As I say, he was the governor. He certainly left it in bad shape. At least Jerry Brown, a lot of people criticize Jerry Brown out here, but he's got a surplus of money in case of emergencies, and as yet he hasn't called in troops to gun down certain prisoners. I'm not campaigning for one over the other, but it's disgusting to use that education and that money and then think, you know, that he could get away with what he did. A lot of people are doing the same thing that Nelson Rockefeller did, and they're getting away with it. They don't all get a little Chappaquiddick affair. But comes election year, if you're in the way of a candidate, you're going to get it. Or if you know too much, you're going to get it. There's a woman that worked for George Smathers, this Mary Jo Kopechne, who had to die in order to keep Ted Kennedy from running for president in 1972. And Carol Taylor, her roommate, worked for Bobby Baker. And, of course, she went under in the Atlantic Ocean. The two girls both died. She was a woman that set up all kinds of contracts and whoring arrangements for Bobby Baker, call houses and so forth for politicians, before Reverend Moon moved into town. Then the Moonies took over, and other people too. It's still going on. But in The Realist, I wrote in 1973, the motives for this kind of operation. I said it's impossible, the way the courts are constructed, to force any revelations that would damage the existing power structure. If Richard Nixon moves out of office, and this was the summer of 73, Spiro Agnew moves in. Now, this was in the summer of 73, before Agnew was pulled out by Richard Nixon. Right after this was published, in the summer of 73, Richard Nixon began to get Spiro Agnew out of office, because he realized that if he was there at the same time as Nixon, I'm sure he knew that Nixon would be killed and Agnew would become the president. I wrote for The Realist that after Agnew, Ronald Reagan will follow him, and I stated in The Realist article, the depth of corruption and link to the sabotage will not be touched. A power base of manipulations and political dishonesty which funds all these men remain. And I cited in this article interests such as ITT, Howard Hughes, oil companies, and warfare contractors and aerospace industries and so forth that really have the hold over the White House, the presidency, and the vice presidency. And once in a while we get a man in there such as Jimmy Carter, who is also linked to the warfare industries, is working. He graduated from Annapolis, don't forget, and ran atomic submarines. He's not detached from the warfare, but Reagan was a selected man, and I feel very strongly that the people that want Reagan as President of the United States have created a situation whereby Rockefeller could be killed and disposed, and the case is closed. And as I say, I think this condition has gone so far that we're helpless, and we have to sit back and just watch the whole thing take place. Well, that's it for this week. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and I'll be with you next Friday, and you take care.